Hello, and thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we join you each week right here on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. But also, the shows are archived, as are all the shows right here on Progressive Radio Network. So that means that you can tune in anytime that you like. And we'd love you to join us at naturalnurse.com because we teach so many classes and workshops. And of course, all these years we've been doing teaching natural medicine since 1964. You got it. That's with a six. So this is not, we're not just newbies jumping on here. This has been our life path for over 50 years, and we have lots to share. So if you go to naturalnurse.com, you will find that many of our classes are online. In fact, they have been online for many years, and now, of course, online is all the groovy way to attend everything. Hopefully that will be changing soon, but for now, and even in the future, online is a great way to learn right from the comfort of your own home. So we have a free webinar coming up on cardiovascular health, risk factor assessment and reduction. And we'll be talking about some of the more what we would say is inclusive, holistic, integrative and functional approaches to heart disease, which is very, very different from mainstream. Mainstream seems to focus on something like cholesterol levels. Cholesterol levels are a very artificial kind of marker, and they overprescribe statin drugs in people who might have a slightly elevated cholesterol. And then the side effects of the statin drugs are much more problematic than the slightly high level of cholesterol. But what we do in holistic medicine is we deeply investigate over 17 arterial disease markers that are overlooked by conventional medicine. So we look at the difference between standard and optimum reference ranges. And then we do much deeper testing into things like differentiating into the particle size of an LDL particle. LDL is low density lipoprotein, commonly referred to as the bad cholesterol, but it doesn't tell you much. You want to know, is it ApoB, which is a small LDL particle? Those are problematic because they tend to be really sticky and cause the development of plaque in the circulatory system. Or is it ApoA? That's another kind of LDL, because that is not sticky. It's a large molecule that tends to slide by and does not build up. So that's a free webinar which is coming up. You can sign up for that at naturalnurse.com calendar if you're interested in more in-depth kinds of things. Or let's say you really love the spiritual aspects of natural medicine, as I do. I love everything from the very spiritual aspects, which we'll be talking about with our guest today, to the actual hard science. So we'll be giving a webinar on Hildegard de Bingen. And Hildegard was a mystic, psychic, visionary herbalist. And that presentation is called Weaving the Tapestry of Healing from the Cosmic Elements. And it does have, like all our classes have, CE credits for professionals, for nurse practitioners, for RNs, for licensed midwives, for massage therapists, for acupuncturists, for RDs. All of our classes have credits for people who are licensed, but you don't have to be a licensed professional to take them. You can take them for your own information. And Hildegard is absolutely amazing. She was a Benedictine nun, and she lived in the year 1098 to 1179. I really laugh when people tell me, oh, you're such a pioneer because you've been doing natural medicine for 50 years. But I don't consider myself a pioneer. I consider myself as part of an unbreaking lineage, going back in time to the very first humans, going back in time to the Neanderthals. And you can track that in anthropological history. For instance, the man who's known as the Iceman, which is a mummy that was found in the foothills of the Swiss Alps, or maybe it's the Italian Alps. The Swiss and the Italian are fighting about that. Everybody fights about everything. Nonetheless, he's one of the most ancient fully formed mummies that was frozen in the permaculture, which of course you know is now defrosting as we face climate change. But nonetheless, he was exhumed, and it's quite an amazing mummy, that he actually had a pouch, which they found all his clothes, full of herbal medicine. So was he the pioneer, or did it reach back in time, way back into the Neanderthal society, who also were advanced herbalists? So I am not a pioneer. I am part of a lineage of truth and justice, which is about referring to our natural world for health and healing. And then we see, like in our book, The Natural Medicine Chest, which is available everywhere, such as on our website and Amazon, The Natural Medicine Chest, written by myself and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, our co-host here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And in that book, we have so many references to the long line of natural medicine that has been passed down through the ages and also has been aggressively attacked, particularly in Western civilization and particularly in the United States, where there are rounds of times where it becomes illegal to share any kind of mention of natural medicine. And when you track back where those blockages are coming from, it's always from the pharmaceutical industry. Because think about who would lose if you learned how to take care of yourself, right? What's going to happen? You will use less pharmaceuticals. That would be the only negative effect. You won't visit the doctor less because the doctor is still the teacher. The doctor also can provide testing so you know where you stand in the correct kind of testing, such as doing a full nutritional analysis, such as doing an IgG food allergy analysis so you can find out which foods you react to, even if it's a long-term allergy that takes 3 days to manifest and can be something like a bad mood. That's important information. So it only threatens the pharmaceutical industry if you learn how to take care of yourself and your family. So you can join us for Hildegard de Begin, Mystic, Psychic, Visionary, Herbalist. That is a course that grants credits, but of course you can take it for any reason you want. And we have another class coming up called Feeling the Consciousness of Plants. And then we have some on-ground classes set up right now where we go out into the field, gather and wildcraft plants and make them into herbal medicine. Maybe they're going to have to be changed into online. I don't know. But right now, I'm there for June. We still have them on the calendar. So check out the calendar at naturalnurse.com, and then you can go to calendar. If you'd like to be on our mailing list, go to naturalnurse.com and just go down to the left-hand corner, and you will be able to just put your email in, and you'll sign up on our email. So we're so happy to bring on board today our guest. She is a physician, Dr. Christine Page. And Dr. Page is a pioneer in the field of holistic healthcare, where she really focuses also on women's wellness. She's a charismatic speaker and a natural, intuitive, and wisdom keeper. And she's been referred to as a mystical physician, seeing herself as a bridge builder between different healing modalities and different states of consciousness. She's believing that illness is a messenger from the soul, and true healing involves transformation into wholeness. And she is the author of 9 books, including Frontiers of Health and the Handbook of Women's Mysteries. Her latest book, known as The Heart of the Great Mother, what a beautiful name, focuses on how to create and access portals that lead us all into a new world of peace, prosperity, and unity. And you can find out more anytime, even now, by going to her webpage, Christine, which is the C, ChristinePage.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Christine.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to be with you and to hear your work as I'm just listening along.
Yes, I've been doing this a long time as well, and
Yes.
have had such a fulfilling life because of it. That's why I also teach a class called Natural Career Paths for those people who would love to incorporate natural knowledge into their profession. And that's becoming more and more possible than it was way back when you started. Why don't we go back in time and investigate why did you want to become a physician in the first place?
It's a great question, and thank you for asking that, because I actually was brought up with healing and homeopathy and mysticism, and I've always been intuitive, I've always known and seen things. So a good question when you say, well, why did I go and become a doctor when I had all of that behind me already? And I'm of a similar age, so I also was doing all of this way back, and I thought that this was the normal way to look at someone in a real holistic way, mind,
So
body, spirit.
wait, let me interrupt you 1 second. Were your parents then involved in this when you say you were brought up? And of course,
Exactly,
in the UK,
exactly.
are you from the UK
I'm from
or
the
some?
UK, so we have a
Yeah.
very different system where
Right.
we have what we call a common law, which says if you, from about 1766, it says that if you, as long as you don't imitate the Queen, a royal or a policeman or a doctor, you can do what you like. So that's why complementary medicine is so advanced in Britain. And we have four homeopathic hospitals within our National Health Service. And
And
we've
isn't it
always.
true? I read somewhere, perhaps it's true, that even in terms of our current health crisis, with COVID-19, that the royal family has always used and continues to use homeopathy as a first line of defense.
I think we've all used it. I would say yes. I mean, the royal family actually support the homeopathic institutes in Britain, as well as acupuncture, as well as osteopathy. I mean, all their horses are all treated this way. And so, yes, it would be very much not just a. I think a first aid, a first, start with those things. And but they've always integrated, of course, orthodox medicine as well.
Right, which is really actually, I think, good medicine. We
Well,
start off using
this is
that
how I
thing which
worked when
is.
I was a general practitioner, a family doctor. I had all my patients had a pack of first aid homeopathy, a first aid aromatherapy, a first aid flower essences. So they knew what to do immediately, and vitamins, and they knew about all these things. And that's how it should be. So as you said, we're teachers. So I did a lot of teaching for my national health practice, and people would come and say, what can I do for myself? And that's very much the empowerment we need at this time.
So much so, so much so. And we see what all this imbalance, certainly leads to when you even see such things as the ice caps completely melting. And yet there's no discussion about changing any of the things that cause that.
Well, yes, and I'm very much into that, but my life's work has been about changing ourselves. I believe that the outer world is a reflection of our inner world as well. So it's not to say that I love looking at all those things, but I'm always saying first deal with yourself. And I'm also one of those doctors who says, doctor, heal thyself first. And that's why I've been fascinated in true holistic medicine, my own soul's journey. So, as you said, I was brought up in Britain, but my mother and my grandmother, etc., were all from Scotland, which is part of Britain, but they were very much seen as the wise women of the community. And that's why I have a very strong link to women stepping up as these community spiritual leaders, because they have a wisdom that goes beyond what the male can because of women's association with cycling, and that's a very big part of that. But I was brought up with all those natural ways. I went into orthodox medicine because it gave me access to so many other parts, and I love doing surgery and I love delivering babies. But what I saw was that while we have someone doing something to someone else, even within complementary medicine, we weren't empowering our patients to find their own inner healing. And so for many years now, I've been teaching and sharing how to listen to your body, how to listen to your intuition, and seeing illness less of a problem and more of a solution, and literally something, because I believe that so often the illness comes when the soul is wanting to make some sort of change in its life. And I've experienced that myself, and that's my experience of over now 40-odd years of being a doctor.
So you have been integrating really the best of both worlds. I had a young nurse yesterday, because as part of what I do in career path counseling, I help people transition to use what's best in science, in orthodox medical training, and moving towards being able to express yourself with a more holistic view, how you have, Dr. Christine Page. And she felt just like she was just going to drop out of nursing school because she really couldn't stand going through the training where they so much ignored anything useful. For instance, you're taught to wake people up to give them sleeping pills.
Right, that's right.
And that's right. Really hard. And I have to say, when I went through nursing school back in 1973, I thought that was hard also. But, you know, sometimes you just have to suck it up and do it for a short period of time so that it puts you in a position to create change in the future.
I think there is that. I was very fortunate, like you. I was trained in the 70s, and we were trained as doctors to make a diagnosis on 80% story, history, 15% touching the patient, and 5% tests. That's all turned upside down.
Oh, my God. That's amazing, Dr. Christine.
My concern is, you know, that I had doctors who were consultants who would say, watch how the patient walks, listen to the mother. It was all about intuition. Trust what you feel. And what I'm concerned about now, and especially watching the COVID situation, is these doctors are following regimes and they're not following their own inner wisdom. And the doctors who are stepping up and nurses who are stepping up and saying, this isn't a normal corona problem, or this is what we need to do, I'm celebrating them. Because these regimes, which you said particularly are set up by pharma, is not the way we were trained to be doctors. We were trained to have differential diagnosis, which was what is happening in this patient and what do we really know, not from tests, but from listening, looking, the real old way of making a diagnosis, because the body has not changed in a million years. So when people come up with a new illness, I say there's not a new illness. Truly, you're just giving it a name. What you have to understand is how the body works together, how all the organs want to work together, and where is it not doing that?
That's very profound. It's really horrible seeing what's going on. I have to say, they keep calling me. I don't know about you, but the powers that be keep calling me because I have active medical licenses and begging that I come into work on the front lines there.
Right.
And truthfully, that's just not a place that I want to be, because I have been helping people even who have been positively diagnosed and they're choosing to take another path. Obviously, they're not at the point of needing a ventilator. That's a different story. But it's a very sad situation. What about just in a regular doctor visit, Dr. Christine, where you already talked about talking to the patient, touching the patient, smelling the patient, I mean, really being there close and personal, in a regular doctor visit, not even talking about COVID-19, that's not going on anymore. The patient's on the table, the doctor's in the corner at the computer.
That's right.
Looking
That's right.
over their shoulder and trying to find the right code to type in, and never even gets near the patient. It's just horrendous.
That's right. I mean, I've been in the States now for 20 years, and I chose not to redo my license and all my exams to work here, because I have been a teacher. I'm a messenger. I want to inspire others to listen to what they know. And I have a lot of doctors and nurses as clients and also students. But it's not more information. It's about how do they listen to themselves, or how do we all do that? How do we understand ourselves first and foremost, and then see ourselves out in the world? And as you say, too many times, and I know money is involved. Well, if I tick that box, that's what we're hearing. If you tick the COVID box, you're going to get more money. This is not the way to do medicine. It's not the way to treat people.
And I love your explanation about what the concept of differential diagnosis. I believe you're saying differential in that even though there's a disease name, it's presenting differently in each individual.
It's doing that as well. I think differential diagnosis was if someone can't breathe, what are the six things this could be? And then it's like being a detective. And I think I'm a great detective. I'm a really good differential diagnosis because that's what I was told to do. So I would argue, you know, with anybody who says, when they say, well, this must be gallbladder disease, I'll say, give me the six reasons why it is. Don't give me your tests. Tell me on your wisdom, your ability to look at this person, why you think that's the right diagnosis. And most doctors can't do that nowadays.
Well, it's, you know, been certainly a devolving situation, and then also the political ramifications of blocking information from those who are wise in the natural ways.
That's right. When I heard that, you know, when they said, oh, well, one of the symptoms is loss of taste and smell, I immediately went back to my nutritional training and went, that's zinc deficiency.
Zinc.
You know, you need to know these things. You need not to say, well, that's just, I don't know why that's happening, let's forget it. We need to be able to train everybody to listen, to be really able to differentiate just by their knowledge that they've gained.
That's so true. And of course, the focus of your work is not necessarily or at all in the medical model, although you have the knowledge of the mainstream medical teachings. Your work is really in terms of the spiritual aspects of life and health and wellness.
It is, and I love pathology. So I spent many, you know, I did a lot of surgery, but I also did a lot of pathology. It's like, why is this blood vessel blocking? What is the message? Not necessarily, as you said, it's not cholesterol, but what is going on in this person's life that their blood vessels that feed their heart are now becoming limited and stagnant? And of course, the heart, you know, the blood vessels in the heart, the coronary blood vessels that feed the heart, do this during the phase of relaxation, not the phase of systole. So it's like, wow, why is this person not able to relax? What's happening to them that they're not finding the joy of life? So I kind of combine everything I know from pathology, and then I work with how can we inspire this person to have an experience that brings back, that opens up those blood vessels, gives them more joy. That's how I work.
Yes, and, you know, tell us, since we're focusing on immunity in today's world right now, and it's
right.
Always something to be concerned about because it is our defense system, what is your perspective of immunity from the body, mind, and spirit?
So immunity, I did a lot of work during the AIDS years, and that was really when I was really getting into holistic medicine. And I worked with, you know, when I trained, you could have an immunity book that was about 3 pages big. And then AIDS hit us, and we suddenly knew much more about immunity than we ever knew before. And really, the immunity is about making choices. It's about making healthy choices for ourselves. And you could just take the gut or the small intestine and say, the small intestine makes a choice. What do I need? What is going to nurture me by taking it in from the food? And what do I need to reject? So it's very much about what nurtures me, what gives me joy, what gives me pleasure. Now, these might be strange words to people, but I ask a lot of people, do you know what brings pleasure and nurturing to your body? So many people are not living in their body, so it's hard to know that. So coming back into the body and making those choices is the first one. And I think for me, having worked with AIDS, many people who actually became infected but did very well were those who had a good sense of self. So immunity is about, do you know who you are? Do you have a sense of this is me and this is someone else? That doesn't mean being selfish. It's more about, do I know that how to empower myself, how to make good decisions that is just good for me at this time. And again, we've been told, don't think of yourself only, think of other people. But that is actually when we have a weakened immune system and we're leaking energy. So immunity is about loving yourself And it's not in exclusion of others, but then you can help other people.
Well, that's a different kind of description, and I think it's very wise to take heed of what Dr. Christine Page is saying. We're going to go for a little break right here, Dr. Page, and when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion about your many teachings, such as your latest book, Heart of the Great Mother. What a beautiful name, and we'll talk about that further. So you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network, and we will be right back with more.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, Sar sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sar sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of Sar sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British Inspector General of Hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sar sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sar sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of Sar sarsaparilla called sarsaparin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sar sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for Sar sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beer flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the Sar sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamite, the Natural Nurse, and as always, we're wishing you the best. And we love to bring you our shows here on Progressive Radio Network. There are actually, I think, thousands of them posted that you can listen to anytime, as well as other shows here on Progressive Radio Network. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest, physician Dr. Christine Page. You can find her at christinepage.com. It's a beautiful website. And also at Facebook, Dr. Christine Page. She's got a lot of YouTube offerings as well as Instagram, so you can track down her work. And today we're talking about immunity, but many other topics as well. And we already discussed that Dr. Christine is a trained physician, and we're looking at a lot of different questions in terms of her focus on spiritual. How did you get the name of your latest book, Heart of the Great Mother?
Thank you for that question. It's a good one. I originally wrote this book back in 2006, which now is 14 years ago. Can you believe it?
I can't.
I can't believe it. You know, it felt like we were so advanced then, and now we think of how we are now. But the fact was, I wrote it then because I was interested very much in bringing, knew that the feminine was needed at this time of transition. I'd heard, you know, knew we were going into this time. And what's been happening from 1996 until 2026 is the sun around the winter solstice is aligned to the galactic center. And the center of the galaxy, or the galaxy, was always seen as the Great Mother by the indigenous people. And the center of that galaxy was known as the heart of the Great Mother. And so it really was a term that I kept hearing as I then got more involved with the 2012 movement, which was that we were going back to the heart of the Great Mother, or the heart of the Great Mother was part of what we call a portal, a doorway into a new world, a new way of being. And so it very much tied into my own work, which was when we come back in tune with our own heart, we align to our soul, and we know, have more awareness of the next journey that we want to take in our lives.
So in what way can people incorporate those kinds of concepts into their life in a practical way?
Yes. And, you know, so the book came out, actually, it was called 2012 and the Heart of, and the Return of the Great Mother. And then my publishers kindly said, well, can we put this book out again? Can you edit it and make it different? And I said, absolutely. So that's why it's just been republished with many changes in it. And the key for me at this time is I want to let everybody know, because this whole coronavirus came out and we were all like, oh, my God, where did that come from? Well, everybody's been predicting that these years would be years of change.
Absolutely.
Right.
I remember going to channeling sessions in the,
right.
you know, in the 1970s, where
yes.
the exact pattern that we're seeing was so exactly predicted, which is why I felt it would be a good idea to set up communities where we could have food, water, and electricity self-contained, which yes. I went ahead and did in the 70s, because I
really?
Thought this would have happened around 1984 because of that book, 1984,
yes.
which we're
yes.
seeing. Can't we talk to each other now on a big wall of a screen two ways? So
exactly.
It's really amazing how it was all really described earlier.
Absolutely, and I think we've all been seeing that this was going to be the time, and I think any of those events could have been the time for this. And without, it feels that we needed a big push. I mean, that's what I see when I'm working with patients who are ill. Sometimes they've known. The first question I always ask people is, what was going on when you got sick? And with people who even have never thought about this, they say, I know why I have cancer. And I think, well, if you know why you have cancer, why are we even bothering to do the tests? You know, let's focus on what you know. And that's what I want to say, is that these things were known, and sometimes we wait until something big happens before we make changes. That's just the way we are as humans. So something big often has to come. So what's happening now is the very thing you're talking about. We're moving into community awareness, not central governments, not central awareness. So these big corporations, and I do a lot of astrology, I'm fascinated by that. What's happening is the big corporations are being exposed for what they're doing. And I think during this pandemic, we're seeing more of that than ever before. We're saying, hang on a minute, you can't decide this for me. Come back to the immune system. I have to make decisions that are healthy for me, my family, my community. And that's really the future. So when you're saying, what are practical steps? We need to be asking ourselves those questions. What gives me energy? What do I love doing? Many people at this time are saying, you know, I could go back to work, but it's not exactly what feeds my soul. So we're being given that chance to, if we can, and I know there's many times where we need just the money, we can't make those choices, but where you can, make a choice to do something that actually nurtures your soul, that makes you inspired, makes you excited, not because anything else is going to never give you enough. And then next thing is we need to be looking to our families. People are having better relationships with their families, or not. I think there's also going to be a lot of divorces. You know, people are saying, I don't actually like being around you. How do we make a better family life? Let's not kid ourselves that everything's going to be sweetness and light. And then the next thing is, how do we care for our community? And where I live in New Mexico, we're seeing devastation amongst our Native American population. And that so saddens me that I didn't even know, I've only been here a couple of years, but 30% of them don't even have running water. Why in the United States have we got people who don't have running water? So we need to understand and not just close our eyes, perhaps, to those who are in need right on our very doorstep.
That's an excellent example. Yeah, that's even been making the nightly news.
Right.
It is interesting because they're talking about an increased COVID case in many marginalized communities,
right,
including the Native American population, Afro-American population, Latino population, and that I'm sure has to do with, as they're talking about, comorbidities. And
yes,
certainly that's true because so many in the Native American population who I've worked with have diabetes and obesity.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the problem. And again, if pharma does one thing, but also cheap food. So cheap food isn't always the healthiest food. But if you haven't got the money, you can't go any further than a dollar to spend on food. We need to be finding a way of bringing better food or helping those communities. I mean, I was speaking to a friend who is from India, and she says we don't have much coronavirus in her particular community because all the food is grown there. It's all using the old spices. And what we're seeing is that people who remember the old spices that their own culture used are actually doing better.
That makes sense. And so that's where I think, you know, self-care also needs to be self-responsibility, because with many clients I've worked with over the years, they certainly do have that issue of limited funds. But when I show them, and I do have an actual sheet that I share about the cost of eating, let's say, fast food type drive-through places to feed a family for a week, which they say is all they can afford, and then they say there's a food desert because there's no big grocery store nearby, yet I go myself into some of the smaller grocery stores, and I definitely see there things like cabbage, rice, and beans. And that would be a whole lot less expensive on so many levels than buying into, well, I don't have enough money, so I'm just going to eat all this junk food. So that has to do really with self-responsibility as well as societal responsibility.
This is the truth, and it is about, absolutely, this next few years is going to be self-accountability and self-responsibility, absolutely. So it's not about who can give something to me. It's about how can we work together and how can we remember what we already knew worked for us. People listening to their bodies. I know I keep going on about that, but it's like, actually that food doesn't work for me, or that doesn't, or maybe I need more of this. And that can be a way of us recognizing that it isn't just, that we need to pay attention to food. And many a time we're so busy, people are so busy. I mean, what we do know during this time, everybody's cooking, everybody's
much
baking,
more. Yeah.
You know? And it's like, wow, I forgot that I could do this, instead of just going and buying something quick that I don't, you know, that we put on the table. So this is a whole, paying attention is so wonderful that is one of the things that is coming out of this.
It's true. But my time management, time is also a limiting factor in terms of self-care. But I've also developed programs because being a single mother myself and having to face that kind of lifestyle years ago, because my children are 45 and 41.
Nice.
If you make a big pot of soup, again, made out of really simple things that are very inexpensive, like celery, onions, cabbage, carrots. You can make that soup once a week. It takes a couple of hours. You do have to put aside those couple of hours, but not every day. And then make little individual bowls and freeze them. I mean, there's ways around it. Of course, if you don't have electricity and you don't have a freezer, that would be a challenge.
Yes,
but there are ways to eat healthy, even within restrictions. And that's why I love so much. Dr. Christine, do you ever, I don't know in any of your books if you ever talk about how we tune into our own bodies. One technique I have found very useful is using dowsing, learning dowsing. Because once you learn self-dowsing, you know, then it's free to use. And that can help you be a tool. You can even hold a pendulum if you learn dowsing, or you make your fingers into a ring and use the O-ring system, or there's all kinds of techniques. You stand there and feel if your body moves back and forth or side to side, which this is all free once you learn it, so that you can actually say, well, I want to eat that really sugary donut, but what does my body want? Like you brought up, tuning into what does your body want? And I have found dowsing could be very supportive in that quest of knowledge.
I think that's great. It's really good. And I think, you know, I used to go and see babies, and young, you know, and they would be under the toddler age. And the mother would say, oh, they only want to eat this. And I'd go, they know what they need. Now, beyond the toddler phase, they're asking for other things. But a young baby does know what it wants. You know, under the age of one, it does know. And so, and I know that with you know, people who are older and sicker, they know what they need. And so sometimes I'm the dowser. I wonder when you can wander around your supermarket, and I still can here. But sometimes I go, oh, I think I want some blueberries because they've got that vitamin A in them. Now, I don't need to know they've got vitamin A, but they're a dark, they've got the dark skin. Oh, I have some more spinach. Oh, it's got some more vitamin A. So taking your body as the dowsing, just as you said, and saying, I don't know, today I'm going to eat this. I made a choice when I went through the menopause that I hadn't eaten meat, but I realized that my body needed small amounts of red meat once in a while. And that, you know, it wasn't necessarily a thought. It was my body saying, I need this. So
yes,
for people to go beyond the,
true.
I should be eating this, or this is what's, to more like, what does my body need in this moment? And it might be a piece of chocolate, it might be some ice cream. But it's recognizing that when you listen to your body, you're never going to overindulge, because you're working in a way that really, because you love your body, and your body is your friend, not your enemy.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Now, what about illness from the soul's perspective? Because, you know, one of the problems with that I have found is, let's talk about people who get cancer.
Right.
Then they begin to investigate more New Age spiritual teachings, and they come up with then the feeling that it is their fault that they got the disease because of an incorrect focus. And that sometimes works to their detriment.
Well, I've worked with a lot of cancer, and I developed breast cancer 8 or 9 years ago. And I never doubted that this was a gift. Now, I'm not asking everybody who's listening to say, wow, she's a bit crazy. I mean, you could say that. I'm saying I'm happy with that. But I realized that nothing else was going to get my attention. And what I learned was, it wasn't about, this is what, you know, I had written, my first book is Frontiers of Health, I write about the message of disease. And I had written that it was about lack of self-love. But what I realized was, it wasn't the fact that I didn't love myself in terms of eating the right foods or doing things, but I had lost the self that needed loving. And that is 85% of us who have had cancer. We are pleasers. We look for other people's needs to be met. And I realized that everybody else's needs were more important than mine. And that's the immune system I was talking about. It isn't, as I say, about being selfish. I'd lost myself. And I would guarantee, if someone was to say to me, you know, I have cancer, what do you have to say? I would say that's one of the biggest problems that we have. And so it's not about blame. And what amused me, here I was in the middle of having breast cancer, and my first thought was, I'm going to go and swim with the dolphins, which I did, because they're very close to my heart. But I couldn't believe how many people, without warranty, I did not ask them, kept giving me advice. You need to eat better. You need to do this. You should exercise more. And I thought, wow, who do you think you are to keep giving advice without even asking me, do you exercise? What do you eat? And the shaming that went in was just amazing. And it was only when someone said to me, oh, it's because your guides have all left you, you're not a good person. And because I've always had guides and no one, my guides were just laughing so hard at that, I knew that it was all, if I may say, bullshit. And I'm just amazed that so many people are shamed when they get sick. So I guarantee you I'm not about shaming. People who come to me ask me, how can I work with this on a soul level, whatever other treatment I'm taking, because it empowers them. So it's not about what you haven't done. It's an opportunity for change. And I have seen and then worked with thousands of people who say, this has given me the opportunity to say no, to say I will not do that again, which can be very hard for someone who's a pleaser, to upset
right.
other people.
Over care for others. Well, thank you for that explanation, and thank you for that personal sharing, Dr. Christine Page. And people can find out more at christinepage.com. We're going to take another break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we'll let you know about lots of other shows that are right here on Progressive Radio Network, and perhaps you'd like to donate to the station so we can keep bringing you and everyone in the world the progressive information that is here on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Stay up to date with PRN for the latest on COVID-19, the coronavirus, on PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. I am Karen Hartglass, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, or catch all of my shows in the archives. You can find my archive programs at the Progressive Radio Network website, or you can call my personal archive phone number to hear the most recent 5 episodes of It's All About Food. Here's the number, 1-701-719-0885. Here it is again, 1-701-719-0885. Learn about how we can solve many of the world's problems today and do it deliciously here on It's All About Food.
New Yorkers are generous and they are grateful and gracious, and when you need help, we will be there for you. The soldiers in this fight are our health care professionals. It's the doctors, it's the nurses, it's the people who are working in the hospitals, it's the aides. They are the soldiers who are fighting this battle for us. You know the expression, save our troops, quote unquote. In this battle, the troops are healthcare professionals.
Thank you, the Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And thank you so much for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We are here today with our guest, Dr. Christine Page, who was educated as a physician in conventional medicine and was a surgeon and a clinician for many years. And she now focuses on more of a spiritual aspect of health and wellness, still bringing to that knowledge the science behind it and the physicality of it. Now, she believes that illness is a messenger from the soul, and true healing involves transformation into wholeness. She has many books, and by the way, I took a look at your website, Dr. Christine, and you have a lot of audio books available.
I do. I have... I'm offering things in as many ways as possible, as well as I have my podcast, you know, Heartspeak podcast. Just, I think it is about offering teachings. I feel I'm a messenger. Just, here's some information. Listen to yourself if it feels right or not. But, you know, without that information that maybe I'm offering, I think for many of us, we're offering great information. You clearly are. And it's just listening to what works for each of us.
But also taking action.
Right. And it takes action. Sometimes we take the opposite action. You know, sometimes a client would say to me, well, not often, but, you know, I didn't do what you want said, but I've done something else. It's just taking any action. Sometimes
we
stop.
But how often, I'm sure this has happened to you since you've been doing this so long as I have. Yeah. You know, I have people who are listeners on this show. We have over 5,000 likes on our Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/naturalnurse. Please go there and like it if you'd like to know more. But very often I've seen the same people, especially when we used to do things like in auditoriums with real people there. Remember those days?
Yes.
And the same people would come again and again, sometimes for 20 years.
Yes.
And they'll listen again and again, but have never done any of it, and then are either surprised, I guess, that they still have whatever the original issue is.
Yes.
You know, in other words, you can't do it for your client.
No. And that's why I think sometimes illness comes, because you're right. They may say, you know, I picked your book up. The book's been out for how many years? I just picked it up, and we all do this, and I opened it, and it said exactly what I wanted to hear. But working as an intuitive, people call me, and they say, wow, you're telling me the same thing that the last 5 mediums have told me. And I go, this isn't about me telling you something. It's you taking action.
Yeah, that's interesting. What could you share in terms of what people could use as a motivation to create change by changing what we do?
So I also trained with Tony Robbins many years ago, and I think there were so many good things that came out of that. One of the things that I always think about, he said, you will not change if the fear of change is greater than the fear of staying where you are.
Mm.
And, you know, that's a taking it from literally a cell. A cell will not move towards something that's more scary than where it is. And, of course, we both have been around people who are in really difficult situations, but the fear of change is greater than where they are. And that's why I'm talking about pleasure. It might sound rather, you know, naff. It might sound like, whoa, she just keeps talking about these things. But you have to make the change more exciting, more pleasurable, and more nurturing than where you are. And otherwise you will not change. And I have taught intuition for many, many years. Everybody's intuitive, but not everybody follows through. That's what I want to say. So even when people get sick and you go, this is a great opportunity to say no to that situation or to change, they'll say, oh, I don't know if I can. I'll stay where I am. I'd rather die. And that's not a judgment. I'm just saying is making changes is about empowering yourself. But you also have to have something that you look forward to in the future that's going to be better than where you are. And so maybe even in this time now, people are getting a chance, as I say, to say, well, actually, what really, if I'm going to go back, as we said, everybody's rushing to go back to normal, but do they really want to go back to the normal they've been in? So it's like, what is the thing that you want to get out of going back to the normal, you know, out of work, out of your family? And again, we're so programmed to just do it. And this is a case of, yes, you may need to do it for a while, but what makes your heart sing? What makes you alive? And that's coming back to that self I was talking about. Who are you? Where have you lost yourself in other people? And where do you want to start to do things that feed your soul?
Well, in this time that we've all been given, I have found it to be a gift in terms of a lot more time for contemplation.
Right.
And a lot more time for yoga and things like that. I have found it really, really a wonderful retreat. But, you know, I don't have... My grandchildren are not in my house where I have to do the homeschooling every day. I feel so sorry for those who have my grandchildren, and actually they have to really do that. And all the parents who are home, you know, that's an additional challenge. But for me, it's been really a time of increased contemplation that I have been grateful for.
And I think, you know, so if I was to say, what are the 3 things that are inside me, inside everybody, that are essential for our lives? For instance, curiosity is something that is always going to be part of my life. I'm, you know, when I'm not curious, I might as well be dead. So having something to learn about or to explore. But I'm also, I travel a lot. And yes, I miss my travel, but what I realized, it wasn't the travel, it's meeting people. It's engaging the energy of people, smiling at them. Now, here we don't have to wear masks mandatory. I feel that my mask, my smile is worth 1,000 masks for the immune system. We need to smile. Smiling and hugging. I'm happy to hug. Now, again, I'm not going to put you at risk, but if someone wants to hug me, I'm not scared of the virus because a hug is so good for the immune system.
Right. Well, those are some of the things that have certainly been limited at this point, but we've been doing things like in Cocoon, you know, sending a light base hug in that movie Cocoon. They do that.
Yes, that's beautiful.
We've come to the end of our time together for this show, Dr. Christine Page. You can find out more about Christine at christinepage.com or visit our archives if you'd like to hear the show again. We also have a live link in the description that you can go right to Dr. Christine Page website. And I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. Do you have any just closing comments or wisdom for our listeners, Dr. Page?
So my wisdom, thank you so much, Ellen. It's been a real pleasure to be with you. I'd say we will get through this and we will get through it together. And recognize the choices that are being offered. We're all in cocoons at the moment, but a cocoon is not an empty space, it's full. This is a time to make great decisions for yourself and for your family and for your community. So bless you all, and know that the Great Mother, the energy that created us all, is there to support you.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, Natural Alternative listeners. Visit us at naturalnurse.com. Like our Facebook page, which you can get to right from naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. And until next time, on behalf of myself, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Samperone, we hope that you stay healthy.